It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Zadora on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 341, the Zach Wheeler edition of the podcast. I'm your host, John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, I'm going to talk to Fangraph's Dan Zimborski, he of the Zips projection model fame. We're going to talk about Zach Wheeler, the Phillies' new number two starter. Obviously, big news, the Phillies signing basically the third best starting pitcher on the market. We're going to talk all about it with Dan coming up in a few minutes. But for the first couple segments of the podcast, I'm going to be joined by the always fantastic Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can, of course, follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. We're going to break this all down for you and talk about next steps. Liz, thanks for coming back on the podcast. How are you?
John, I'm ready to go. How about you?
I'm ready to talk? I'm ready.
Let's have a chat.
Let's have a little chin wag, shall we, about Zach Wheeler coming on board. And Cole, we're going to dip into the Cole Hamels thing a little bit later, too, because we both have feelings about it. As I know, most of you listening have feelings about it and the direction of the Phillies moving forward. But let's not bury the lead, because obviously the signing of Zach Wheeler is very big news. The Phillies went out and signed the 29-year-old to a five-year, $118 million contract, according to Jim Salisbury. That comes out to about $23.6 million a year. He's just the third pitcher to get a $100 million contract in team history. That's after Cole Hamels' $144 million extension and Cliff Lee's $125 million free agent deal. It's also the third largest free agent contract in Phil's history, behind the Bryce Harper deal and the Cliff Lee deal. Hamels and Ryan Howard each signed a nine-figure extension with the team. So, I mean, this is a big contract in Phillies history. They very rarely go to this level, but they felt it was worth doing for Zach Wheeler. And, you know, the reason why they're doing it, this is one of those rare free agent signings where the team is actually looking, hopefully, at future performance against past performance. He's been decent the last couple of seasons. He had made 31 starts last year, pitched 195 and a third innings, 1 year after making 29 starts and pitching 182 innings. He is just 29 years old, so you would think that he's got a bunch of prime years left in front of him. According to Fangraphs, he was worth 4.2 wins above replacement last year, 4.2 in 2018 and 4.7 last year. He had a 3.96 ERA and a 3.48 FIP in 2019. Strikeout rate remains steady. He doesn't give up many walks. I mean, this is a guy that should help this team this year, Liz, without even if he doesn't improve. But I think the thing that we're looking at here with Zach Wheeler, and the thing that the Phillies are looking at with Zach Wheeler, is that, yes, if he does no better than he has the last couple of years, the Phillies are getting a high-end number three starter, low-end number two starter. But the hope is that the 98-mile-an-hour fastball, that the killer splitter that he has, the wipeout slider that he has, that new pitching coach Brian Price will be able to figure out a way to get this kid to increase the strikeout rate. Because if he does, you're looking at a guy who has the stuff to be an elite starter. It's just a matter of whether or not he can put it all together. What's your take on the Zach Wheeler signing?
I'm disappointed. I wanna be on board. I wanna be optimistic, and I'm glad that they've gotten a good pitcher. They obviously felt like they needed to get a guy like this. They obviously felt like they needed to get someone. I guess they didn't want to wait around for, you know, Strasburg or Gerrit Cole, but it still feels disappointing, because I think they're giving a lot of money to a guy who's certainly not a sure thing. You know, I think a lot of people are banking on this ace potential that is locked inside of him, but I've seen no evidence that the Phillies have any ability to unlock it. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he does this season, but I'm also, as I said on Twitter, looking forward to whatever excuse the Phillies front office gives us if this doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Brian Price, it's kind of unknown what he's going to be able to do as pitching coach.
We have no idea.
We have no idea.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, it's all a big question mark. Like, as I've said, they recently fired a guy who they hired and promoted over another guy who subsequently, you know, went on to be with their rival.
Yeah.
They fired him after he pretty much caused every single pitcher to take a step backwards.
No, for sure.
Everyone took a step backwards. Like, Brian Price, you know, he has a track record, but he is an unknown quantity with the Phillies. I'm just uncomfortable with the assumption that the Phillies can turn him into anything other than what he is.
I'm skeptical as well. This is not the guy that I wanted when we started the offseason here, because there are a lot of question marks with Zach Wheeler, and $118 million over 5 years is a big contract. No doubt about the fact it is a big contract, and he does have some injury history. But then again, so does Steven Strasburg. You know, if the Phillies had gone and signed Steven Strasburg, the same kind of injury history would be there, so there'd be that kind of a concern. But Strasburg has proven that he can be an elite starter for sure and do it in the postseason. Garrett Cole the same way. And based on a report by Matt Galvin, The Athletic, I mean, I don't think the Phillies really thought that things were going to get as pricey as they were with Wheeler. He said they paid Wheeler more than they had expected to pay him when the negotiations began, according to two sources familiar with the talks, but that's because they viewed the gap between Wheeler and the next best option as too vast to argue over. And that I don't disagree with, because I think the next guy after Wheeler, most people seem to think, is Madison Bumgarner. And I would have no part of Madison Bumgarner. I would have liked Hyunjin Ryu on this team, but I don't know that I want Ryu as my top signing this offseason as far as pitching is concerned. And Ryu carries more injury worries than Zach Wheeler or anybody else. And so I think, to me, what the Phillies did here was, I think they realized that, and we're going to get into kind of where they are with the luxury tax in just a few minutes, but I think that they saw the price tag for Garrett Cole and Steven Strasburg as being a little bit too high. They were going to have to go too far in terms of years of control. Like, they're going to have to go 6, 7, 8 years for at least one of those guys. And I think they also see the competition with the Yankees and the Angels and the Dodgers and some of those other teams as being...
They're all willing to go the gears.
They are.
Like, sack up, Phillies.
They are.
I'm sorry. Like, just swallow it, because this is what you have to do to get an elite pitcher. You know? There's no other Roy Halladays out there. There were only Cliff Lees. They all want what he got, and the Phillies gave it, and they're going to have to do it again. But they don't seem willing. Like, what are they doing? I just don't understand what they hope to do with this, because I think it just makes things more difficult for them down the line to actually compete.
Well, I think the issue here too is, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but I was adamant. I know you and Justin disagreed with me at the time about giving Patrick Corbin a 6-year deal. I think they clearly realized they probably should have done that last year, was to give Corbin. Yeah,
they're practically paying them the same amount of money.
Yeah,
only
from this point on, from this point on, Zach Wheeler and Patrick Corbin are going to make the same amount of money over the next 5 years. In the case of Patrick Corbin, they would have already gotten a great year of pitching out of the guy.
I'm so excited for the future, John, to see how this works out, aren't you?
Well, I'm trying to look at it optimistically, because
I know, and I'm here playing angry.
The Phillies, with the way they have approached things over these last few years, does not deserve the benefit of the doubt at the moment. And
yep.
So I totally understand the skepticism. I totally get it, because with Zach Wheeler, we've seen him over the last couple of seasons have an up and down first half of the season and then really turn it on in the second half of the season. And he's been quite good in the second half of each of the last two seasons, and his overall numbers at the end of the day have looked pretty good. There was a piece by Ben Clemens in Fangraphs last month in which he talked about what's missing from Zach Wheeler here, because here's a guy who throws 97, 98 miles an hour with ease. We've seen him dominate the Phillies over and over again, which I know is not often hard to do, but he has looked electric when he plays against the Phillies, and he has strikeout stuff. He has stuff where he should be a 30% strikeout guy, but last year he struck out 23.5% of batters that he faced, which puts him 45th among pitchers who threw at least 100 innings. And although that's effective, I mean, guys like Greinke and Hyunjin Ryu had a similar strikeout rate, and he also doesn't walk many guys, so that's good. He's not going to put guys on base. He's got a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, a really good splitter, a really good slider. Why isn't his strikeout rate higher? And he looked at basically what it is that Zach Wheeler does and doesn't do well. Zach Wheeler gets ahead of hitters. He throws first pitch strikes. He gets ahead of hitters with two strikes. He works ahead in the count. So he does the hard part well. He gets to two strikes, but he throws too many fastballs when he's got two strikes, and those fastballs aren't elevated. They're in the middle of the plate. And so the problem seems to be getting Zach Wheeler, and this sounds very similar to the type of issues Nick Pivetta had, is getting Zach Wheeler when he's got two strikes, if he's going to go for strikeouts, to elevate the fastball or to throw the slider and the splitter more to get hitters to chase, because those are two good chase pitches. So the thinking here is get Zach Wheeler to make this simple change, get his strikeout rate to 30%, all of a sudden, you're talking about a co-number one starter with Aaron Nola. That's the hope. That's what they're seeing in him. And
it's a simple change, John.
It's a simple change.
It's
it
exactly
really
what
be.
They wanted Nick Pivetta to do last year. And look what happened.
Well, no. And but here's the thing. I think Zach Wheeler has better stuff than Nick Pivetta. I really do think he does.
Absolutely.
So
it's just it's hilarious because now it feels like we'll never be rid of him.
Well, yeah. Could you have?
Nick.
Can Nick Pivetta and Zach Wheeler exist in the same, you know, earthly plane at the same time, or is that going to foul up the space-time continuum in some way? I'm not quite
sure.
We're going to find out. But yeah, so I mean, listen, I get the skepticism of Zach Wheeler. I truly do. Right now, the rotation looks like Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, Jake Arrieta, Zach Eflin, and, you know, I think they still need to go get one more pitcher. And we're going to talk about a couple of people who might be available to do that as of right now. But, you know, I guess do you kind of see where the Phillies are as far as seeing a big difference between Zach Wheeler and the guys after him, or do you see it as more closely bunched together than apparently the Phils did?
I think I do see a difference. Like, I'm not going to say that he's not an improvement or that he is not going to help, because he certainly will. My issue is that I don't think he is everything they need. I think they need more, and not just as in another body, but as in more crammed into a single person, like an actual ace.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that's where I'm at. Like, I can recognize that he's better, and I appreciate it, and I'm glad. And I certainly hope at least that continues.
Well, a big part of this, too, has to do with the payroll and the luxury tax, and this is one of the other things that that Matt Gelb mentioned in his piece for The Athletic. He is reporting that two sources tell him that the front office has been mandated that they do not go past the luxury tax of $208 million. That the front office is operating under a directive to remain below that threshold.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that
really
puts
great.
So the Wheeler signing puts them at $188 million, according to Fangraphs, and they're calculating arbitration salaries and pre-arbitration salaries and all kinds of everything else the Phillies have that they owe different guys, which leaves about anywhere from $16 to $20 million, depending on how the numbers shake out, to fill the rest of their needs here this offseason. And that they still need, I think, another starting pitcher for the back of the rotation. There are guys out there that I think could be had. They need to get another infielder because Cesar Hernandez and Michael Franco are not coming back. And I think they probably need to do something on the relief market, although it sounds like they might just want to add a bunch of bodies and see what happens, which, you know, given the way things went with David Robertson and Pat Nashak and Tommy Hunter the last few years, and Juan Nicasio, I can't say that's a terrible idea, because the pricey bullpen guys they've gone out and gotten the last offseason were all terrible over the last couple of seasons. So, you know, the luxury tax is something. It's a self-mandated salary cap. They don't have to abide by it. And in the first year of going over the luxury tax, all you do is pay a financial penalty. You're not paying anything in terms of draft pick or anything like that. So I find it interesting, and I have been saying this for weeks now, and people on Twitter and people in response to the podcast have been giving me a hard time about it. But when I've been talking about this offseason, I've been trying to be realistic about what the Phillies can go out and get, because the Phillies have never gone over the luxury tax. Very, very, very few teams go over that luxury tax. And until your team actually does it, you can't assume they're going to do it. You have to kind of look at the luxury tax as something that is kind of a hard cap. And it appears as though that factored into the Phillies' decision here, that going after Gerrit Cole or going after Steven Strasburg was never going to be something that happened if their mandate was to stay under the luxury tax. And it appears as though that's the case.
I have a question for you.
I'm ready.
Do you know how much John Middleton, tobacco cigar magnate, is worth?
I'm going to guess. I think I remember like a couple billion dollars. Is that right?
According to the internet, he's worth $3.3 billion.
Yeah.
According to Forbes, do you know how much revenue the Phillies brought in last year as of April 2019 before they started getting the Bryce Harper bump?
I don't know. I'm going to say $1.5 billion.
It says $341 million on an operating income of $94 million and player expenses of $120 million.
I shouldn't have
guessed. Now, that number's going to go up this year, but so's their revenue.
Yeah.
I don't understand. If someone wants to explain to me why this team that makes... Now, we have no idea. We can't look at the Phillies' books. We can't see those. No one will let us. But according to Forbes... they're making what I think is technically referred to as a buttload of money.
Yes.
And their owner could literally swim in a Scrooge McDuck vault of his own earnings. So there's no reason that they shouldn't spend more money other than there's a cap. You can call it a luxury tax, but that is a cap. It's a salary cap because no one wants to go over it. And the teams that do go over it do things like fire their GM and are rumored to trade their MVP player, Mookie Betts. Like, when they go over the luxury tax, you go under it as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
That's a cap. And if it weren't there, what would teams do? Who knows? Maybe it would just be spend as much money as they could actually afford. Because it's just artificially keeping them at a certain level. That is the problem. That and the fact that John Middleton apparently thinks he can take his money with him when he dies. He can't.
Well, I mean, yeah.
It's all staying here, guys.
This is where it really gets hard to suss out because, you know, spending $208 million on your ball club is a lot of money. The Phillies are going to be near the top. But you're right. I don't understand when you have that kind of money and you know that – you need to spend this money because you've done such a poor job drafting. You've done such a poor job developing players that, and you know, he did say at the beginning of the offseason they'd be willing to go over the luxury tax for a player that puts them into the World Series. And so maybe towards the end of the offseason, if Cole and Strasburg are still hanging around, or Anthony Rendon's market hasn't taken shape, or even Josh Donaldson's market maybe hasn't taken shape, maybe the Phillies talk about going over the tax for somebody like that. But it certainly appears as though going after Zach Wheeler, they did that with in mind of signing a guy to a $23.6 million average annual value so that they could still try and fill some of the other holes while staying under that tax. Instead of just saying, you know, hey, let's get Wheeler and let's also get Hyunjin Ryu and let's also get Josh Donaldson. Because I think the next move here is, you know, trying to go get Didi Gregorius. That seems to be the next move that the Phillies are interested in making, and they could squeeze that in with the money that they have left. And I'd be all for the Phillies going out and getting Didi Gregorius at this point. I think that would be a fine move, but it also still doesn't quite feel like enough. And I know we're asking the Phillies to spend $250 million on the payroll. That's what has to happen if you want to be a contender and you've done such a lousy job at developing and drafting players.
Yep. If John Middleton wants to win, this is what he has to do. If he really cares about being held aloft on the shoulders of Philadelphians, then he'll do it. And we're going to find out in the next couple of months whether that statement that he made, that, you know, we will go over the luxury tax if there's a player who can, you know, take us to the World Series. We're going to find out whether that's lip service or not, because at the moment it seems like it is, because they have a mandate not to go over the luxury tax, and they just signed a player that makes it harder for them to sign another, to sign a big money guy. It makes it harder for them to do that and fill the rest of their holes. So, I mean, at this moment, I'm assuming that they're just not intending to sign a big player. Well, does it seem like they are?
So you don't think Zach Wheeler is a big player? I think this is a big signing. I think
it's a big signing, but it's not. I mean, when I say big signing, I'm looking at, he's not Bryce Harper caliber.
No, he's not.
That's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of big stars who have proven talent that does not have to be further developed.
Well, let me ask you,
frustrating. Like, we can just pull more out of him. Like, no, why can't we get a guy who's already done? Why can't we get a guy who's spent enough time in the oven? Have him just be what he's supposed to be instead of just getting guys who need to get better or find something in themselves. I'm just done with that.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not the biggest Zach Wheeler guy in the world. He was not my first choice, but even if he isn't any better than he has been the last couple of years, he's still a 3-4 win pitcher, which is a good number three starter. And if Aaron Nola returns to form, you've got two solid pitchers at the top of your rotation. My whole thing is, so for me, Zach Wheeler's a big signing. It's not the guy I would have targeted, but it seems to me they didn't think that they could get Gerrit Cole or Steven Strasburg. Or
because they didn't want to.
They didn't want to wait around to see if either guy would be available for them. And it sure sounded like teams like the Astros and the Reds and some others were ready to sign Zach Wheeler, you know, as soon as today or this week. So the Phillies felt like they had to pounce. And it certainly sounds like the Phillies went down the road with Wheeler and it got a little bit more expensive than they were thinking that it was going to be. I just think that I'm fine with Zach Wheeler being your guy if you added another strong starting pitcher, you know, like Ryu or like even Dallas Keuchel or something like that. And I still think they'll go out and get somebody like Tanner Roark or Wade Miley or, you know, somebody like that, or Jordan Lyles. Those would all be, you know, I had Roark and Lyles as being a couple guys I thought would bounce back with obscenely high homer rates last year that were out of character for the rest of their careers. And so I would like those, one of those guys as a number four, number five starter works for me. But, you know, to me, Zach Wheeler is the third best starting pitcher on the market. And I do think he was clearly a step above everybody except perhaps Hyunjin Ryu. And, you know, if Hyunjin Ryu had been their top offseason target, that still wouldn't have been enough for me either. You know, I just think, I just really wonder what the market is for Cole and Strasburg and whether the Phillies really could be players in that market right now, given everybody else that's involved with those two guys.
Maybe they'll prove me wrong. They can't. They could prove me wrong and be players. You know, even I want them to sign one of those guys, but being serious players in that market would go a long way towards convincing me that they would do it. They would go out and get one of them. But like Wheeler and the other names that you were throwing out, if you're the Brewers, if you're the Cardinals, if you're the Braves and you go out and get Cole Hamels, those are the guys you get if you've made it to the playoffs. Those are the guys you get to bolster the incredibly strong core that you have, the guys that you've drafted and developed, the guys that you've brought in from outside once those guys were ready to go. That's what you do. You add those guys to fortify your roster and add more depth and replace weak parts. When you're the Phillies, it's not enough. Like, they could go out and get Ryu, but that's still...
Wheeler and Ryu wouldn't do it for you?
I don't know. I mean, they're really, what I hate is that there's no one between Wheeler and, you know, Cole and Strasburg. There should be someone in there. There should be some guys, because it's a pretty big valley between these guys.
Well, that's where the missed opportunity last year of Patrick Corbin, who is in between those two guys. That would have been the guy to go after last year.
Is there any point when the Phillies aren't going to kick themselves for doing something that was so obvious to begin with? Every single moment they look behind them and see something that they could have done that would have worked out well had they not gotten in their own way.
Yeah.
Man, how I want to start when is Matt Klentak going to get fired, Poole? Because I don't think that this is doing it. I don't think that, I mean, we are like 5 minutes into the off season and I'm already ready to fire him. Wow. I might just be, this might have just been a really frustrating day for me. So get back to me maybe in a week. But,
well, let's,
I'm ready.
Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll get into something else that'll frustrate Liz. We're going to talk a little bit about Cole Hamels. And so we'll get into that whole fun Hornets nest, coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, talking about the Zach Wheeler signing and what the plan is here for the rest of the offseason here for the Phillies. And I think Liz and I probably are coming at this from a little bit different angles. I think I'm a little bit more optimistic on the Wheeler signing and what the Phillies have done so far than Liz is. But I think one area we will agree is that Cole Hamels signing a one-year $18 million deal with the Atlanta Braves is among the worst things that could have ever happened. I'm talking really? Sports, real world, the history of the universe, all of it. There's no Cole Hamels is going to be in an Atlanta Braves uniform next year.
No, stop it. No,
it's going to happen. He's going to be coming, barring injury. He's going to be coming with the Atlanta Braves to Philadelphia in May. And then for two other instances here in 2020. Mm-hmm. I really, really wonder what the fan base reaction is going to be when he comes back to town. Bob Nightingale reports that most of the teams that were bidding for Hamels were not offering more than $15 million. So it's clear the Braves really went after Hamels aggressively with an $18 million offer. Todd Zielecki reports the Phillies only offered Hamels a $9 million one-year deal.
Okay.
Liz, go.
As you said, John, that's insulting.
It's an insulting offer, $9 million.
It's insulting.
It's an insulting offer, that is.
I'm not surprised that the number came out because that is, I mean, I have no official knowledge of this, but that is 100% Cole Hamels' agent. Leaking
oh,
that information
sure.
to
the fan
to
base.
Todd Zielecki,
he wants the fan base to know.
A reporter that he knows. Like, he's letting him know because he wants everyone to know that the Phillies screwed over a franchise. Made it an incredibly insulting offer to a franchise hero. The man is a franchise hero.
And he apparently
hero.
Wanted to come back. That was the other thing in
he
the Zielecki article, was that he wanted to come back, but he was only...
I'm so angry. I'm so angry and so sad about this. And it's so dumb. But it would have been such a simple thing to do. I bet if they had offered $15 million, he would have taken it. The Phillies have already given him a lot of money. And he wanted to come back. So if they had just ponied up what everyone else was offering, he might have picked them. I also feel... like the Braves offering $18 million is just slightly passive aggressive.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It's really, it feels like it's purposeful. It feels like it was done to hurt us. That is almost certainly an overreaction. I'm reading into things because this is a business. But also I feel like it was done specifically to make us unhappy. Because the Braves cannot ever just exist without hurting someone or something.
Yeah.
Be it Native Americans or just other baseball fans.
It's been a busy offseason for the Braves, and this was a...
Why are they doing so well?
Man, this was a killer, because now he's going to join Mike Soroka, Mike Fultonavich, and Alex Fried as in their starting rotation as their like number four starter. He was very good last year until his oblique injury, and then he tried to come back too soon and really struggled after returning from the oblique injury. So the Braves obviously thinking that they're going to get the guy from the first half of the year, and his stuff is still incredible. His stuff is still great. When the news came down that the Phillies passed on Cole Hamels at $18 million, I wasn't mad about that. I was upset that he went to the Braves because of the fact that they are division rivals. But I couldn't get upset with the Phillies for not dumping $18 million into Cole Hamels. Because, you know, all this time, again, I've been figuring that the luxury tax was a thing that they were trying to avoid. And if you're looking to upgrade in a bunch of areas, giving $18 million to Cole Hamels probably didn't make a whole lot of sense. I figured the Phillies were probably around $13 to $15 million, which to me felt like the right price for Cole Hamels. But $9 million, I mean, that clearly, you're right. That's John Boggs telling Todd Zielecki and whoever else will listen, Phillies fans, he wanted to come back. This was the offer we got. It wasn't even a possibility given where the Phillies were in this whole process. So, you know, it's really interesting what the Braves have done now, because they've gone out and they've added Hamels. They've gone out and gotten Will Smith, Travis d'Arnaud, Chris Martin, Tyler Flowers, Nick Markakis, and Darren O'Day. They've committed $98.75 million to the roster so far this winter, but they've only, almost all of those guys are on one-year deals. And now it looks like they could also be going after Madison Bumgarner. It looks like they could still be in that pool. So, I mean, I'm not a big Bumgarner fan, but mostly that's because I'd be afraid of what he would do at Citizens Bank Park. In Atlanta, in another pitcher's ballpark, it's a little bit of a different story. So Atlanta is being aggressive here in the offseason, and so far I don't think they've made any moves that are wipeout moves, but they are strengthening an already good team with some help in around the margins.
Yeah. I wish I could say that I didn't like what they're doing, but they're going out, they're filling the holes that they want. They're obviously not going to spend a lot on a big free agent. That's not their style. They're just doing what they did last year when they came within like a Mike Foltynewicz start of making it to the it wasn't the World Series.
No. The Braves lost in the wild card. Oh no, it was a 5-game series. Was that the wild card?
And they fell on their faces.
That was the 5-game series. That was game 5 where Foltynewicz blew up, wasn't it?
Yeah, they fell right on their faces. Right. So they're obviously feeling a bit burned and going out to fix those problems. You know, they got close last year. And honestly, they should have. They should have beaten the Cardinals because they were better. And the Cardinals lost almost instantly. So they're doing what the Phillies should have done. They're just going out. I mean, I guess what the Phillies are doing. They're being aggressive and getting the guys that they want. I guess I just don't necessarily agree with what the Phillies are doing. But I'm going to... I'm going to go back on every single thing I said in the first segment and try and be a little bit more measured and balanced about it, not be an angry, raging weirdo.
So what would, let me just figure, what would be Liz's off-season dream for the Phillies here? I mean, what would be the ultimate scenario that you would like to see the Phillies do? Cost be damned.
I would like them to sign Gerrit Cole. That is who I want. That's really the only thing I care. I mean, I would settle for Strasburg, but Gerrit Cole, and then they could go after, like, you know, a $5-8 million back of the rotation pitcher, because they've got a lot of strength up front. I don't think they need as much in the rest of their rotation if they have Gerrit Cole and Aaron Nola presumably returning to form, and the rest of it matters slightly less. So everything else, all the other holes can be filled. I just feel like they need to invest in bigger pitching. They're just choosing to invest their money in a different way.
Yeah, and I just...
I hope it works out. Like, I want it to work out. I should have made this clear up front. I'm not rooting for this to fail in any way.
Sure.
I want Zach Wheeler to do well. I'm glad he's here. He is going to prevent someone that we're all very tired of from pitching the rotation this coming year, so thank God.
Yeah, I'm
letting my anger get the better of me.
And I do think I do think you know that having a new pitching coach in there will help. I'm just forgetting about Zach Wheeler, even with somebody like Zach Eflin, you know, who is going to be in the rotation here at some point, and you're going to probably see Spencer Howard at some point in 2020. And I do think they're going to go out and they're going to probably get, I think they need a left-hander in this rotation. So I would like to see, I stumped for Wade Miley last year, and I thought he was really good last year up until September. Alex Wood would be an interesting guy, a left-hander in the rotation that you could add at the back end of the rotation. Probably wouldn't cost more than, you know, $7 or $8 million, something like that, on a 1-year deal. So, you know, there are different guys. Like Julio Teheran, you could go sign him. He's a righty, but I kind of like him as a number 4 starter in the back of the rotation. I really feel like, and this is where the Didi Gregorius conversation comes in, because Joe Girardi was talking up Didi Gregorius like crazy this week. I think that's something that's going to happen. That was when we talked on Sunday night. I think my prediction was Gregorius would be the first free agent the Phillies were going to sign. I'm surprised, actually, that Zach Wheeler signed as quickly as he did.
Yeah, that was really shocking.
Yeah.
No one was ready
for
that.
No, we woke up this morning, and it just, once you know, once all of the national writers and the beat writers started talking about the Phillies' interest and how it seemed to be moving, Rosenthal was out at like 10 a.m. this morning saying this could happen today. I mean, he was all over it, noting that this thing was happening fast. So some of these guys, they want to sign fast. And other guys, if you're not a Scott Boras client, you know, Scott Boras likes to have his guys out there for forever. And so that's why I think that's the other reason why Matt Klentak went with Zach Wheeler now, is I don't think he wanted to risk not getting Zach Wheeler or somebody as good as that, waiting for Gerrit Cole and Steven Strasburg to meet with all the teams, to go through all the negotiation and do all that stuff, and risk losing Gerrit Cole to a West Coast team, or risk losing Strasburg. Most people think Strasburg's going back to Washington anyway. So, I mean, basically, if most assume he's going back to Washington anyway, you basically have six or seven big money, major franchise teams all going after Gerrit Cole, throwing tons of money at the guy. In that case, I think the Phillies figured, you know what, let's go get the next best guy we think is available, and that's kind of what they did with Zach Wheeler.
I think that's fair. I think that's entirely fair. I think what I'm angrier about is that the Phillies have a mandate not to go over the luxury tax.
And that's a totally justifiable, if that is true, if that is their mandate, that is totally justifiable to be upset about that.
Because I legitimately don't think they can build the type of roster that they need if they don't really want to trade anybody.
Which is insane when you think about $208 million and not being able to build a roster that's good enough because you've done such a poor job supplementing from within.
Yeah. I mean, everybody who is a regular listener knows well my feelings about, you know, the current system for, you know, draftees and all the service time. And how little they're paid at the minimum compared to the talent that they contribute. But in this system, the Phillies had a chance to be like the Cubs and draft well and not just draft well, but develop well. The Phillies got an influx of talent over time. And while some of them have contributed to the main, you know, to the team at various times, there has been really the only standout is Aaron Nola.
Right.
Aaron Nola is really the only true success story. Yeah.
Out of all of the trust the prospects guys, it's basically been Aaron Nola, and he was before that whole thing.
2015, yeah. he came up.
I mean, because Rhys Hoskins, we still don't know exactly what we've got in Rhys Hoskins. Scott Kingery, same thing. I mean, they're going to be starters. They're going to be major parts of this team next year, but still don't know. And I think one of the things this does now is it sets up the Phillies to go after some offensive moves, because there's a ton of back of the rotation pitching that they could go out and get. And I think they're going to get one of those guys. And I think any one of the guys that I've mentioned would be fine in the back of the rotation to give themselves another quality arm. But going out and fixing, getting another piece for this infield is going to be key. And I do think it'll be Didi Gregorius, and that gives you some options as far as what to do. I would have loved to seen them sign Moustakas.
That happened so fast. I was so sad that they missed out on him. It would have been so great if they could have gotten him. I've wanted him for years.
And Josh Donaldson is out there. And if you sign Josh Donaldson, one of the things the Wheeler signing did was it makes the Phillies give up their second round draft pick for next year. If you go out and you sign another qualifying offer free agent, you give up your third round pick as well. And, you know, draft picks are draft picks, but you can't give away all your draft picks. I mean, you can't do that every year. And the Phillies have done that every year here so far. So at some point, you pay the piper, and the paying of the piper is you got to sign lots of free agents and stuff like that. It's a tail eating itself a lot of times. But they could still go out and sign Didi if they weren't worried about the luxury tax. You could sign Gregorius, and you could sign somebody like Josh Donaldson, and really strengthen your infield, and then maybe trade Alec Bohm for pitching. But then you're trading one of the few really good young prospects that you have, who most people think is going to be a very good hitter at the big league level, even if his future defensive position is a little bit murky at the moment. I think what this Wheeler signing does, and what the conversation about the luxury tax here does, is it almost assures that Alec Bohm is going to be a part of this 2020 team in some way. It might not be at the start of the season, but it'll probably come at some point mid-season. So if they sign Gregorius, maybe they, you know, they can play Kingery at third and Segura at second, or they can trade Segura and put Kingery at second base and go out and sign somebody as a temporary stopgap solution until Alec Bohm is ready to come up and try and develop a good young offensive player. Every good team needs to have somebody like that. You need, you know, you need it. I don't think Bohm's ever going to be a Juan Soto or a Ronald Acuna, but you at least need a guy to come up and be an Ozzy Albies. You know what I mean? You need to have somebody come up and be somewhat productive at the big league level. And, you know,
they need a steady, productive,
young player,
a good young hitter. They just need a good young player. And it seems a lot like they've been falling out of the trees like apples in the fall, but they don't. You know, they're not as common as you think. It just seems like it because two of them are in our
right
division.
Yeah, it's hard.
It just seems like they're constantly up our butts being really good in our faces.
Yeah, for sure. So, but I think...
Oh, God, and those Pete Alonso. Like, I say they're not coming out of the trees, but what have the Phillies been doing? How? I just don't know how this passed them by. And I guess, you know, probably a lot of teams end up having this problem, but I haven't even really thought about it. Maybe they don't. I don't know what the Phillies have done so tragically wrong to end up here, because I know it's a crapshoot, but to miss so significantly, I think, on almost every highly hyped player that they've held on to.
Well, I think we're going to find out here over the next couple of years with Gabe Kapler no longer here, with John Mailey no longer here, with Chris Young no longer here, with some of the other guys no longer here. I think we're going to get a sense for whether or not how much some of the coaching has held them back, some of the poor decision-making by the front office has held them back, whether or not there's been some things going on in the minor league systems as they're revamping everything as far as player development goes has held players back. And hopefully things start to turn around there with this new regime in place here. But, man, it's at the end of the day, the Phillies went out and they got themselves the third best free agent starter on the market. And, you know, it's not the guy either of us wanted at the start of the season. I think we both said during the start of the offseason that if Zach Wheeler is their top offseason acquisition, it doesn't feel like enough. So neither of us are super enthused by the signing of Zach Wheeler. I'm hopeful that we at least get what we've already gotten from him, for what he's already produced over the last couple of years. I hope if the Phillies get a 3 or 4 win pitcher 4 out of the next 5 years, then the signing was worth it. Then it was, even if he doesn't take the leap and become a number one or a high-end number two starter, it still would have been worth it. But that being said, this team really could use a true ace, you know, to go with Aaron Nola. And that just, maybe it was never in the cards. Maybe it was never realistic and we were all just kind of shouting at the moon because of all the other holes that they needed to fill here. But at the end of the day, the Phillies do go out and they do get Zach Wheeler. And, you know, I guess we'll have to let the chips fall where they may, Liz. Any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
No, just... the future, as I've said many times, the future is a mystery and it is all out in front of us. I'm eager to see what happens with this team and to just continue to be delighted and tortured by it as we move along, as is the life of a Philadelphia sports
fan. That's our life. That's what we signed up for. So, folks, make sure you're reading.
Welcome, Zach Wheeler. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and one last thing. Zach Wheeler's wife is from New Jersey, and apparently one of the factors, he turned down a larger contract from the Chicago White Sox.
I missed that.
Yes.
Oh, I feel bad for my White Sox
yes.
friends. They've been so depressed.
They offered him, I believe they offered him more than $125 million is what I read, but it was more than what the Phillies ended up
Whoa.
Giving him. And he turned down the White Sox because his wife is from New Jersey and they wanted to stay on the East Coast.
I'm totally blown away
yeah.
by that.
Yeah. I should have mentioned that earlier. I totally forgot about that until just now.
I did not for 1 minute think that the White Sox were serious.
They're serious.
About competing. And now I feel bad and I wish they'd gotten him because he's kind of the perfect pitcher for them because he's not too big of a move. He's just big enough.
Well, and I guess that's what the Phillies were thinking here. Is a lot. He was Zach Wheeler. No matter what we,
they're in many very different spots.
Yes, no doubt about
in their rebuilds,
it would have been a perfect move for a team like the Twins. A perfect move for a team just like that. But there were. I'm taking comfort in the fact that there were a lot of really smart teams, a lot of really good teams that were interested in Zach Wheeler and were aggressive in him. And so this isn't like the Phillies thinking that they can turn a frog into something else, you know?
True.
So I'm trying to take solace in that and be optimistic that there were a lot of teams that thought that Zach Wheeler was a good investment. And so the Phillies ended up getting him, but that was the whole thing. Welcome Zach Wheeler to Philadelphia. He kind of already knows. You know?
Yeah, that's so true.
That's why I brought that up.
At least his wife
exactly.
knows.
His wife knows.
And, you know, he pitched in New York. He's not unfamiliar.
Yeah, no, he's pitched in Philly. He knows how it goes. Aesthetic. So it'll fit right in, and he's familiar with the division. So I think at the end of the day, if we get the Zach Wheeler that he's shown the last couple of years, I think things are going to be all right. But folks, make sure you're reading everything Liz is doing over at Yahoo Sports, and make sure to follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you Sunday night.
Thanks so much, John.
All right, well, up next, we're going to talk to Fangraph's Dan Zimborski, and we'll get his thoughts on the Zach Wheeler signing, as well as Didi Gregorius and some other Philly stuff. That'll be up next here on Hittin' Season. Well, and joining me to talk about the Phillies signing of Zach Wheeler, and we'll get into some other stuff as well, specifically the Phillies' interest in Didi Gregorius, is Dan Zimborski. You, of course, know him as the proprietor of the Zips projection model for Fangraphs. You can also follow him on Twitter at DZimborski. Dan, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing today, John?
Doing good, doing good. Looking forward to your projections when they come out here in the next, few weeks or so. But I know there's a little blurb on Fangraphs about it now, just to kind of get people warmed up.
Yeah, I usually have something to answer questions that would probably annoy me or things I get mad about. It's kind of for my benefit, possibly, because there's always some question that someone asks that I've answered a million times, and I can be short-tempered sometimes, and then I say something that's very kind of not helpful.
I understand.
So I write down all my thoughts ahead of time, and then I can just point to them. It's very relaxing.
Well, good. As long as it's cathartic for you and lets you kind of get your feelings out without causing any damage. And folks, make sure to check out that piece at Fangraphs from Dan Zimborski, and keep an eye out for his Zips projections as they're getting ready to get those going here for 2020. All right, well, let's get to the big news of the day, Dan. The Phillies went out and signed Zach Wheeler to a 5-year, $118 million contract. There's a lot of opinion about this, obviously, by Phillies fans. A lot of fans are happy with it. They see a guy who's been pretty good for the Mets over the last couple of years, and they see a guy with some untapped potential, but there's also some remorse that the Phillies appear to be out on going out and getting Gerrit Cole and Steven Strasburg, and that this is probably going to be their number one pitching acquisition of the offseason. But tell me your thoughts on Zach Wheeler, new Phillies right-handed starter.
Well, probably the biggest thing is that he's actually been healthy. That was kind of the big sore point about him, because his career after 2014 was waylaid for really like 2.5 years due to injury. And that's probably the biggest deal for a pitcher, because, you know, they're so breakable, and it's hard to, even a great pitcher, it's hard to give them much money if you're worried about their attendance. I think of old Rich Harden, who always, until later in his career as a young player, he pitched well when he was healthy, but he was so rarely healthy, he's not someone that could actually fit in Oakland's plans all that well. I think that since he has been healthy, he has been solid, he is a top pitcher, and I think he's going to be paid like that. He was probably hurt this year because the Mets' defense wasn't great, but he's probably, you know, a 3.5, 4.5 win pitcher, and that's a player who's going to get $100 million. Some people were surprised he was getting bids for over $100 million in the rumors. I'm not actually surprised by that. The thing is that even when you're going after one of these first-tier free agents, I mean, not necessarily Machado or Harper level, I think it's important to realize that if you're a competitive team, that he's more valuable to you than he is to, say, a rebuilding team or a 500 team. And there's only a few of these players every year that hit free agency. And if you want to add one of them, you do have to be aggressive financially. That just comes with contending. You want to make sure you leave yourself enough payroll, because when you're actually winning games and adding those last pieces to the roster, the last pieces to the roster are never going to be, you know, economically efficient.
No, that's true. I mean, especially and when you go out onto the free agent market, there's always a markup. And that's part of why teams traditionally have wanted to try and build from within, because you don't want to pay for that markup based on past performance. But I think one of the things about Wheeler that has the Phillies intrigued and a number of other teams intrigued is the fact that they think there's more there. They think that there's more than what they've gotten from him over the last couple seasons, which is the production of a number three type starter. But there are hopes that with the type of stuff that he has, a fastball in the high 90s that can touch 100 miles an hour, with some breaking stuff that can absolutely buckle hitters, that he's been leaving some food on the table, as it were, that the strikeout rate isn't quite as high as it should be. Do you see any more upside to Zach Wheeler, and what do you think are the chances he can reach that?
There certainly is some more strikeout upside left. You go back to the previous problem when he just missed a lot of development time. You don't get those years back. But he does have a pretty large repertoire. He relies a little bit less on the fastball every year as he's brought in a large repertoire. He changes speeds a lot more than he did early in his career. I think he can be a Cy Young candidate. Not a favorite. I'm not going to say, hey, his projection going forward is the same as, say, Max Scherzer's. But he's not that far off.
If Chris Young was still the Phillies pitching coach, I would have absolutely zero confidence that they would be able to get more out of Zach Wheeler than what he's already given you. And you might not need more. I mean, he would definitely be an upgrade over most of what the Phillies already have, but or have had in recent years, with the exception of Aaron Nola. But with Brian Price now as the Phillies pitching coach, we don't really know a whole lot more about whether or not he would be able to get more out of a pitcher like Zach Wheeler. I would imagine that they have a lot of confidence that Price would be able to access some more of those strikeouts and help Wheeler achieve a better ERA, maybe get down into the low threes, or even maybe be the type of guy who can be a low-end number one starter for the rotation.
Brian Price was always tricky in Cincinnati to get a complete read on. He always had a great reputation as a pitching coach. He's worked for the Mariners and Diamondbacks. In Cincinnati, kind of the problem was the Reds had so many injuries from the young pitchers that he never really got to work on that with them consistently. So it's hard to really blame him for none of them really working out. I think that I do think he's a good candidate. And, you know, if he doesn't work out, the Phillies will go another way. But as long as they're not using him as a manager, I think they'll be fine.
they've got Joe Girardi in the fold, and so I think all of us are feeling pretty good about Girardi in that job. And I want to talk to you about Girardi in relation to another free agent the Phillies could be getting here pretty soon. But let me just kind of double back on the pitching market here. And I think Phillies fans, if most of them will be happy the Phillies did something, that the Phillies spent money on the guy who's perceived to be the top guy among the second tier. But there's going to be some wistfulness about those guys in the first tier, Gerrit Cole and Steven Strasburg, who are going to make a lot more money than what Zach Wheeler is going to make. What do you make of that market for those two guys? Is it going to be a while, do you think, for Cole and Strasburg to sign? And where do you think ultimately both of those guys end up?
I think Gerrit Cole, I mean, his party, shall we say, pretty much said that they were hoping to sign pretty early in the winter. But that's kind of hard to do because teams are still, I mean, when you're making a bid that's going to be over $200 million, and it will be over $200 million for Cole and probably for Strasburg as well, you don't just, you know, splurge 2 weeks after the World Series ends.
Right.
Get to see where he fits, what your offseason plan is. I think they'll both sign contracts over $200 million. And it's really hard to say where they'll end up. I suspect that in addition to the leading candidates, there's always, you know, a mystery candidate or two, like the Phillies and Cliff Lee. I don't think he's going to go to the Marlins. Either going to go to the Marlins. I think that's a pretty safe bet. And nobody is going to go to, you know, the Orioles. But right. I think there are probably, you know, 10, 12 teams that are probably at least dipping in their toes. I know the White Sox are saying they're not, and they're more in on Wheeler, but they were in on Machado last year. And if they don't get Wheeler, then it makes sense to start looking at those guys. Or anyway, I mean, the White Sox do have payroll room if they're willing to spend the money, and they should be. But Yeah, I'm not going to get too much into a prediction for an exact location because that's a more difficult challenge than you might think.
No, sure. And, you know, the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Angels being more aggressive for these guys definitely makes the competition a lot more fierce than it was when the Phillies were battling teams for Bryce Harper and Manny Machado last year. So that's why I think the Phillies are probably recognizing that fact that, listen, it's hard to see the Yankees, Dodgers, Angels getting denied for one of these guys if they really want one of them. So let's go get the next best thing and get him early, and then we can fill in our other needs. And I think the Phillies' philosophy has been that if one of those two guys is still kind of hanging on the vines in February or early March, that maybe they re-enter the picture. But barring that, it looks like the Phillies go out and get Zach Wheeler is their number one target here. The other guy, the position player that I think is most closely linked to the Phillies, and I think he's going to be the first position free agent to sign with the Phillies, is Didi Gregorius. Joe Girardi was talking him up a lot yesterday, and I don't think that's a coincidence. You know, I think if Joe Girardi has the clout that I think that he has with this team, that he's really pushing Matt Klentak in the Phillies front office to go out and get the former Yankees shortstop. What do you make of that as a potential match for the Phillies?
Gregorius is a fascinating candidate. I mean, he is really a top 10 free agent, even if he's not perceived as such. I know his numbers were down quite a bit in 2019, but he was also coming back from injury. And you're talking about a guy who just, you know, the year before was playing at an all-star level. He received MVP votes, I believe, in both 2017 and 2018. He's a really good shortstop. It does give the Phillies some more roster flexibility with what they actually want to do with Segura. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a good signing, and I don't think it's going to be a huge money deal. I'm still mildly surprised that the Yankees didn't offer a 1-year deal. I know they're playing, oh, we don't have any money, like kind of like the Red Sox are too, but maybe not quite that extent.
Right.
But I think, you know, if someone said, hey, can you sign Gregorius for 1 year, $18 million? I would have jumped at that because even though there's a risk, there's not much risk in a 1-year deal.
Or just give him the qualifying offer. At least sign him to the qualifying offer. Or make him a qualifying offer. At least you get a draft pick then if he signs someplace else, because you still got him for a year and 17 and whatever million dollars.
Yeah, and but since they didn't, it works out for his new team since they have to keep everything.
That's right.
So I guess he doesn't have a complaint about it, I'm sure.
I wouldn't think so. So let's just play this out, and let's say that the Phillies go ahead and get Didi Gregorius, and then they don't add another third baseman like Josh Donaldson, certainly probably not Anthony Rendon at this point. If they go into 2020 with an infield of Rhys Hoskins, Gene Segura, Didi Gregorius, and Scott Kingery, is that enough offensively to be considered a good offensive infield?
I think it is. I mean, Kingery's still a little difficult to kind of, you know, get a full read on.
Yep.
I mean, coming into 2018, I had him projected much better than he actually did. I mean, his OPS was somewhere around 600 in that rookie year, and that was kind of disappointing. And then last year, I guess, like everyone in baseball, he found another 10 home runs and and had probably a little better than I expected. So I guess the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I mean, I think that's a fine infield. I'm glad the Phillies kind of, you know, cut the cord with Franco, because I think every year there was this kind of feeling that this was the year that Michael Franco would have his breakout. There was always some reason, some bit of hope in there. But, you know, now he's been essentially, you know, starting at third for, I guess, 5 years.
Yep.
And he still hadn't had that breakout offensive campaign. His glove still isn't really, I mean,
it's all right,
you know. It's not Gary Sheffield Milwaukee issues, right. but it's not going to support that bad. I mean, yeah, he hits some home runs, but everybody hits some runs these days. So I am glad they kind of, you know, said, okay, if we have him, we're going to probably play him. So let's just not come to terms or anything.
And what do you make of Rhys Hoskins? I mean, he had a great first half and then just fell off the face of the earth in the second half. He's been a very streaky hitter his whole career, but never to the point where he had a final 80 games last year where he hit under 200. I mean, he's still walking quite a bit, but what kind of a season do you anticipate for him here in 2020?
I mean, he's still young enough that I'm not really worried. I was quite disappointed because his power disappeared to a large extent in the second half. And that's kind of unusual for a power hitter. Mm-hmm. I to just disappear. I know especially people have this idea.
Especially in a year where the long ball was really such a thing that it disappeared like that.
Yeah, I mean, at least it wasn't like Chris Davis. That,
right.
Or, you know, one of the, I guess both the Chris Davises in a way.
That's right.
So, I mean, that was concerning. I'm still hopeful that he'll bounce back. I think that if you look at his numbers, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, he wasn't hitting poorly. His velocity numbers didn't drop like a rock. He was still hitting fly balls. It's not like he became the Eric Hosmer grounder machine.
Right.
So I'm still hopeful. I don't like to, you know, write off players after what essentially were two bad months.
So let's say that the Phillies get Zach Wheeler. They get Zach Wheeler. They get Didi Gregorius. What's next for them, do you think? I mean, do you another starting pitcher? Do you think they still try and address third base?
I think the question becomes at that point, say they have Wheeler and Gregorius, is how their long-term payroll is, how willing are they to stay above the luxury tax? Mm. Because there are some things, you know, that come off the payroll next year. I can't imagine as of right now that they're, you know, chomping at the bit to pick up Arrieta's option. You have whatever they're paying Jay Bruce. I forget who gets what. It's kind of tricky. But, you know, there's some guys to move. Although you still have to talk about Real Muto, who is going to be a free agent. So it depends if they say, hey, can we maintain a payroll at like $220 million long term? And I think they can. But, you know, teams do have this tendency to try to stay under the salary cap, which is a salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
It works like one, even if we pretend it's just a luxury tax. So really what it comes down to is the team's willingness. And that's hard for me to say because they're not really volunteering that information to me.
Right. Last question for you. Bryce Harper, what kind of season did he have in your eyes in 2019? Did it meet expectations? Was it a little above or a little below? And are we expecting kind of the same thing in 2020?
It wasn't a bad year, but it just felt a little disappointing compared to the contract he signed. He signed a massive contract. And part of Harper's contract was because, you know, he was also entering his age 26 season. So there was always some speculative upside left in Harper. And the money reflects that there is a chance that he improves. But he didn't really. There were long stretches where he looked like an MVP the way he mm-hmm. hit. But then he just go for a month and look like just another guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to see him have because That's the thing about Harper is that despite his reputation, he only has one season where he played a full season and it was at like an MVP level. And that's the only time that was like what, 2015. Am I getting my years?
I think that was 2015. Another year. Check. Yeah.
That's really the only one year that we've seen like what we expected from peak Harper. I mean, it's hard to call a guy a disappointment when he's like at 30 WAR and mid-20s. But it feels like he should have been, you know, battling it out with Mike Trout,
mm-hmm.
which he isn't really. I think it's been pretty clearly established that Trout is the better player.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for a better season, but there is a possibility he's just a 4 or 5 win guy, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's just mildly disappointing. It's not like a Greg Jeffries disappointment for the Mets or something.
Or the Phillies. Greg Jeffries, his career with the Phillies was massively disappointing, too. No, you're right. A 10 WAR season in 2015, according to Baseball Reference. He had a 4.6 in 2017, and then he had 4.2 last year, according to Baseball Reference. So, yeah, for a $330 million guy, I think it was because it took so long for him to get going in the season last year. It felt a little empty. It felt a little disappointing. And by the time he really started to get hot, no one else on the team was hot.
On the plus side, his defensive numbers did rebound.
Yes.
He had that weird down blip his last year in Washington. And people can sometimes take defensive numbers, you know, too seriously in the short term because they're quite volatile. But I think that he showed that was probably a fluke, that he's fine defensively in a corner. Although the days where you probably want to stick him in center, as the Nationals have done did do at times. I think those are probably behind him.
Yeah, no, and that's why I think, you know, going out and getting another corner outfielder doesn't make a whole lot of sense for this baseball team, because then you're looking at either Andrew McCutchen or Bryce Harper in center field, and
yeah, and I don't
nobody
want
wants that.
That.
No.
Yeah, the Phillies have already suffered by being a little too aggressive by putting a player in the outfield that he shouldn't, because remember Hoskins, and I'm sure anyone listening to this remembers Hoskins, and it's not like he didn't try. He put a lot of effort into trying to learn the position. It was pretty public that he was really, really putting in all the stops. But he was just, you know, a Todd Hundley level corner outfielder. And I think that's what probably McCutchen would look like, especially in center at this point.
Yeah, especially coming off an ACL tear. Yeah. That's just not the game you want to play. No, for sure. Well, listen, folks, make sure to check out everything Dan is doing at Fangraphs and with the Zips projections. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at DZimborski. Dan, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. We always have fun.
All right, so let's finish off this podcast with our stat of the week. Zach Wheeler had a Baseball Reference wins above replacement of 3.9 in 2018 and 3.5 last year. There have only been six seasons by Phillies pitchers since 2013 that have been as good. Nola's 10.5 back in 2018, Cliff Lee's 6.8 in 2013, Cole Hamels' 6.6 WAR season in 2014, Nola's 4.5 season in 17, Hamels' 4.2 in 13, Nola's 3.7 last year, and Jared Eichhoff's 3.6 in 2016. Zach Wheeler's 3.5 would slot in just behind Jared Eichhoff's 3.6 from a few years ago. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Liz Rocher and Dan Zimborski for coming on the podcast. A reminder, folks, to leave a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts for the Good Fight podcast feed. Make sure you check out the latest episodes of Continued Success and The Dirty Inning. We do appreciate you stopping by and hanging out and listening to the podcast. And if you have a few extra minutes, stop on over to the Hittin' Season Patreon. We've got some extra content there. A new podcast going up with Chris Jones and Justin Clue, just for Patreon subscribers only, so go sign up on the $5 a month tier and catch that dynamic duo break down the Zach Wheeler signing. Again, that's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.